Aaron asked me to give a public health perspective, but I have to tell you, I think Eric gave a public health perspective, and he gave it very strongly. When Myron called me up and said, I'm putting a panel together and I want you to be on it, I think I gave kind of the same response that you gave. Oh, my God, you know. But Myron is very persistent and convincing, and so I decided I would try to put some thoughts together. How to make oral health a higher national priority. Now, I could have just popped off like I've done for 30 years, but I decided to be a little bit analytical and systematic and try to give it some thought. And the first thing that occurred to me is that in 30 years, and I went to my bookshelf first, and that's not my bookshelf, but if you looked at my bookshelves from three different places, there are enough studies about oral health and access to care and what's wrong with Medicaid and all that to fill that much bookshelf. So the first thing that struck me was there's tons of evidence there, but we're still asking a question now we might have asked in 1993, in 1980, 1950. Now, I then went to my file system. That's actually the file in my basement. And I looked in a file called Healthcare Reform, and there was right next to it called Speeches. And yellowed paper from 1993. I've got some quotes here from Eric Olson that I'll share with you later. And what was in the next file but my photo? So this is called Radio Corbin Dating, right? The photo was right next to the file. So I've now dated both the photo and the file. But there's two questions that I need to answer in order to be able to talk about how we make oral health a higher priority. What does it take to move any issue into a national priority and secure action? I haven't been working specifically in the oral health field or categorically in the oral health field for 7 years, but I'm certainly facing this question every day. And what has been attempted historically to make oral health a national priority? Because we need to be informed by what we tried in the past, or we keep doing the same thing over and over again, like that. So I think, first of all, the issue has to be identified by a credible scientific or advocacy group. You know, we've done this in the past. There was Rhys Jones, Savage Inequalities, you know, probably a decade ago, and citing Jonathan Kozol in that book, if you've ever read his book, and how alarming that is. So you got to identify the issue credibly by a scientific or advocacy group. Then you have to communicate it to a wider audience, and the info needs to be generated through both scientific and lay press. Healthy People was a great example of that. Hundreds of organizations involved, dozens of chapters, all kinds of citations. Somehow the issue needs to make its way onto the policy agenda of at least one major organization, and I'm going to call Special Olympics a major organization. And in 2001, we had a Senate Appropriations Committee hearing in conjunction with our Winter Games, and we actually got appropriations after that. So we got it on our agenda at a national level. Then you have to have a bridging strategy to other organizations. And, of course, the Surgeon General tried this with the Oral Health in America report and then the follow-on activity, which was an action plan to try to take advantage of the findings of this report. It's critical that no major organizational player stands in opposition. I recall back in 1993-94, that all the oral health organizations were not of one mind and one voice. I don't know that that eventually made the difference in whether or not healthcare reform succeeded or failed, but I do know that we were not on the same page back then. I can say that today I sense that there is no major organizational player, maybe except for the National Governors Association and a couple of other organizations, that are really standing up visibly to fight against expanding dental benefits in any kind of a health plan, whether it's for children or otherwise. Got to be a true national stake that impacts security, sensitivity, prosperity of the nation, or the economy. I'd say the sick kids issue, of course, is one that is a sensitivity issue. You heard Diamante Driver's name mentioned there. But you also see a recent article, states talking about reducing the number of children in the insurance plan, so that there's an ebb and flow to all of this. And it's really like pushing a rock up the hill. And I think Mr. Prentice suggested we've got to be together and put every single one of our contractions in the same direction if we're going to make these muscles work in for our success. You need a powerful advocacy group. So no significant group against, and a powerful advocacy group in favor. And I pulled this off the website here, the AARP Bulletin, and I definitely consider AARP the powerful advocacy group, maybe the most powerful advocacy group that's ever existed in the history of the nation. Outrage over sympathetic, acceptable, vulnerable groups. Now, when HIV hit in the United States in the early 80s, and we identified some new disease and new lesions in gay men in San Francisco, that was not deemed a sympathetic or acceptable group. And it took a long time to get over that hurdle till they became a worthy group for public health support. But I think we have now, with the story about Diamante Driver, there was another child, I think, in Texas, who also died from a dentally related problem. And I think we do have the outrage we need now. It's actually producing legislation at the state level. How about a renewed health threat? Now, I understand this is CDC data and that it doesn't represent the entire data set, but I think there's a suggestion that with some population groups, there may be a problem of increasing levels of untreated disease. That always makes the case a little bit stronger. So I'm giving you some suggestions on how things are coming together here. Policymakers then move the issue to the public debate and they propose remedies. There's Mike Simpson, who was mentioned a little while ago, and I think he's going to be a strong advocate for oral health programs. I thought this was quite curious. I didn't go to the American Dental Association meeting this year, but this was in the ADA news. Delegates think universal health care is a possibility. Actually, if you read the article, it was stronger than that. They think it's a probability. They don't know exactly when or exactly the scope of it, but they think it's a probability. So this is definitely different than what the environment was in 1993 and 1994. Okay, so now what's the other side of this question? And that is, what have we tried to do in the past? And this will be very familiar with you. The arguments that we've used in the past. Dental disease is a universal scourge. Everyone's at risk. Oh my God, we're all affected. That hasn't been enough to get it enacted in the past. Tooth problems are responsible for general body dysfunction, can be life-threatening, and you heard that earlier from Dr. Olson. However, the Greeks and the Egyptians had the same idea a couple thousand years ago, so it's not a new idea. Dental disease is costly. Dental disease is preventable. Dental disease is treatable. Costly, preventable, treatable. All right, we've done that. Dental caries is declining and confined to a small percentage of the population. My God, in the late 80s, there was a declaration that the epidemic of dental caries was over. We didn't get that one quite right. Dental care can provide any smile you can afford. Yes, that's one of the strong arguments that's been made. Dental disease is a hidden epidemic affecting all groups, especially the vulnerable. The current non-system of care leaves millions at risk. Much can be solved through local initiatives and public dental education. I think that was a curveball. Dick DeStacio, former president of the American Dental Association, said, you know, what donated health care and education is great, but it's not a serious strategy. Innocent children are dying from lack of routine dental care, one of the more recent ones. National legislation is needed to assure essential dental care for vulnerable children. That's the S-CHIP argument. So what I've done here in a very rapid way is just go over several decades of the most predominant arguments that have supported an action for higher national priority for oral health. However, none of these arguments individually or collectively have been enough to push oral health above the critical policy threshold. I can say this, that when I looked through my files and I pulled out this yellowed papered speech here, I was reminded that we did get dental care into the last bill, the last health care reform bill before it all crashed. And it would have provided comprehensive dental care for all children in the United States by 2001. And it would have started picking up incrementally care for adults after 2001. Not everything, but incrementally picking up the care. I also can tell you that Eric Olson is very consistent over time in what he says, because he said in the fall of 1993, in a different role than he's playing today, that if dentistry is left out of national health care reform, tax deductibility will be lost, and that would be a terrible thing in terms of access to care. He said that when employees take on the cost of their plans, 75% of them will drop their coverage. He said the loss nationally in gross income for each dentist would be $60,000 annually. Now, that was in 1993 terms, so that could be $100,000 now easily. He said if dentistry is in completely in healthcare reform, the increase in the average gross for dentists will be about $100,000. He said if dentistry is out, public health suffers. So Eric was giving the public health perspective then and now. Just keep in mind that dental disease is an old disease. I think we had all the elements of dental disease a long time ago. Agent, host, and environment were all there. They still are. And in this day, 2007, this kind of a situation can still happen. This is James. James is a gentleman from Kentucky with moderate intellectual disability. And he came into a clinic down there run by a very fine developmental dentistry provider, Dr. Henry Hood. And when you look at James on the left, even though you are health professionals, you probably are a little repulsed by that. And you say, who would want to be around James? What employer would want James standing at the counter, bagging or stacking or doing anything? What employer would Walmart want James as a greeter at the front door? But through compassion and care and caring, James was basically transformed in a matter of a few weeks. Now, that's a human being on the right. That's a vibrant human being. That's somebody you'd invite to have lunch with you. So what I'm saying is, in this day and age, and Eric, I go back to your reference to DeMonte Driver, that allowing that child to die from that, through that conspiracy of neglect and ineptness, this is the same kind of a thing at a different stage. James didn't get this way as an adult. James started getting this way as a child and an adolescent. Let's make sure that there are no more James in this country. Thank you.
Very well done, Steve. The nice thing about asking Steve to ever present anytime is he always gives a very thoughtful, comprehensive, interesting and action-oriented presentation. And Steve, as usual, you did a great job. Let's give him another hand. Is Kaya Lewis here? Okay, my fear is that our fourth speaker from Senator Kennedy's office probably got tied up with legislation in Congress. But the nice thing is this gives us a little bit more time for Q&A with the audience. We have roughly a half hour, which was what I was hoping to do. So we have a chance for some discussion. Start thinking of your questions. I think I'll start with the first question with Dr. Olson. Eric, you know, as a dentist being in your role in AARP, in the past, a number of times we've tried to get AARP to pay more attention to oral health. Over the years, we've had a couple of people from staff come and speak at our meetings. And I understand within the last year or two they've included oral health insurance program in one of their benefit packages. Could you tell us a little bit about that and where you see oral health going from here? Why don't you come up here and use the mic? Thank you.
Well, actually, that represents one of my failures through the years. Through the years as a CEO of Delta Dental and worked hard, actually. This is back in the 80s. I have a file on it, by the way, Steve. I have whole files, too. A file on trying to get AARP to include dentistry for seniors in the health program. And as an aside to that, I've always thought that should be in Medicare, but that's put that aside for a minute. And I never got the job done, and my successor also failed at that. And now his successor, and that's how old I am, when you speak at your successor's retirement, then you're, because I guess I just spoke at my predecessor's funeral. He has now succeeded in having AARP do a dental program, and as you might think, that's created kind of a problem for me and a conflict of interest base. I had to leave all the rooms when they were discussing because it was out to bid and all that. But I'm pleased to say Delta Dental did get that program. It's very, very difficult to write a voluntary program for dental program for people. It's extremely difficult and extremely risky. It's probably costs what people consider too much, but you have to assume that only people who join are going to need care shortly. The benefits aren't as high as most regular employer programs, but they did succeed about 3, 4, 5 years ago. It's 5 or 6, I guess, and I left the room and all to get a program installed, and they've been improving it every year since. It's now in all 50 states. That was not easy. It had to go through every insurance commissioner. I mean, that's another whole problem there. That was very difficult, very expensive for Delta Dental to do. My understanding is it now covers 250,000 people. It has pretty much a 100% benefit for preventive services, 50% for pretty much restorative services, and then a year wait for 50% for, I think, prosthetic services. So you have to join for a year before you're eligible for that type of thing. But it's a program, it's growing, and they keep working at it. AARP has an insurance trust that meets on these things. And though I'm not serving on that anymore for a while as chair of it, they do ask me questions about it. So it's now a program, it's operating, it is available. But it's like any other self-program, it's like I say, it's too expensive. I think like premiums are, they vary, there's a whole scale, but it's $40 a month for the program, and you need to go to a Delta Dental provider, that kind of thing.
Any more questions of Dr. Olson, Bob? Stand up so we can hear you.
Oh, yeah, okay. You know, I've seen all you guys, and now, like Jay. No, yeah.
You mentioned the need for a social marketing campaign in systemic disease. With 39 million members, isn't AARP in a great position to start that?
We are a very great social marketing organization, and we, in fact, have done that. We have, as our chief executive, a man named William Novelli, probably one of the premier social marketers in the country. He actually probably was behind the scenes years ago in a different job getting the tobacco money out of the, going to the States. I mean, you can argue what's happening to it now and all that. He was really instrumental in something called the Association for Tobacco-Free Kids, I think. And Bill was the CEO of that. I was proud to be part of the search committee at AARP that hired him as our CEO, and he is our CEO. We have done some rather successful social marketing since he's been there. I view Divided We Fail as our biggest attempt yet at, you might call, social marketing. But America needs health care reform, and we need financial security. And that's what we're doing. And as I said earlier, I urge you to, you're going to have to undertake, and I say you, him, all of you, and I don't know if anybody's here, but you have to go where the money is. And that's kind of the question you're asking, maybe. Who has the money within the dental profession? Well, ADA, of course, has oodles of money, I know. And no, they're like, but they are, you know, they're a big national organization. But it seems to me in the past, the dental supply companies, the dental insurance companies, all are elements in that. And what I'm saying to you is, you need your own program.
More questions, Jay?
Eric, I just have to say that when you acknowledge the father's dentistry, there's no disrespect.
No, I...
we do have to mention Matt Shane, who was really one of the originators.
I want to say, he mentioned Dr. Matt Shane. He's absolutely right. Dental prepayment started off as a choice system. And Dr. Dixon took the mantle that the Dental Association was proposing and ran with it. Dr. Max Shane had a proposal on the capitation side. It's kind of fascinating to me how that's merged together now somewhat. As a matter of fact, I was one of the mergers along during in my career.
Anyway, what I really wanted to ask you, though, it seems to me that in any consideration of healthcare reform, we have to, AARP seems to be silent on the issue of financing. Has it taken any position with respect to single-payer health insurance? And the second part of this, too, is that I think it's generally acknowledged, at least among those of us in the public health arena, that there's a major manpower shortage, and that recent developments in Alaska with the dental therapist has been one means of developing a manpower source that would provide care for those populations that, without additional manpower, are not going to receive any care.
In answer to your last thing about the manpower, we haven't studied that, and we don't have a policy. But to your key one on the financing of a program, I honestly believe that one of the failures in the 1990s was organizations coming out with specific proposals for how to solve this problem. And one of them probably was also the administration at that time. And she admits that, by the way. This has to be bipartisan. Congress has to be involved in it. It has to have appropriate comment at the time. So what right now we're for affordable health care and quality health care. And we can get more specific. I named a few things. But as far as the financing, we think that is yet to be debated and determined. I will say this, as far as I know, two of the very most successful programs we have in the country for health care are the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan that I presume maybe a lot of you folks have, I think, and then something that I have called Medicare. You could cast one on one side of that divide and one maybe on the other side of that divide. I think this for sure I'd say, and anybody who doesn't say this is not thinking right. In the United States, any program we have is going to have a private element and a public element. And aren't we debating as to which, how much, and which side? And I don't know what the answer to that is. But that's how I feel, and that's how AARP feels on it.
Just one comment on finance. If we got a dental benefit that covered all children and some adults and all that, the likelihood is it would drive up the cost of dentistry. I'm just really curious, because right now I don't think there is an abundance of chair time all over the place to deal with that. And so it doesn't take much of an increase in demand to drive up the price very
maybe Bill analyzed my remarks better than I just did. We're flying at 30,000 feet.
In the back, and it'll come to the front.
I do have a question. You're talking about national health plan, and we're looking at the finance and the expenditure of healthcare. We see that they keep rising. And like United, there was a period when they increased how it's called managed care, and that's the worst thing for us. And healthcare expenditure continues to increase. Do you think it would be appropriate at this point to have a universal healthcare? Would be better to look at how we can contain costs and then provide additional benefits from the government?
As I understand the question, national health expenditures have been increasing on a regular basis for many, many years.
Yes.
And the question is, should we be looking at how to contain costs before we go for a national health program of some kind? Is that the question?
That, I presume, will be one of the debates at the 10,000-foot level or in the trenches or whatever. A lot of the current proposals, and I think I know several of you from California. I live right across the border in Nevada, so I follow that. I get the Chronicle, but I think that's kind of being debated pretty heavily out there now, and I don't know where it is from day to day, but it costs a lot more money. I think Steve made a good comment about the dental part. Probably would. As far as overall, you take those five, not the sixth thing I listed, but the five of them, there's actually enormous savings in every darn one of those. My God, information technology, who knows? Prevention, chronic care management, there's a lot of room for savings actually within what we're doing now. And, what do you read the estimates of what we're wasting? What, 25%, 35%? So I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I hate to see us get tied up in not getting a plan that's affordable and quality for everyone if we get tangled up in that too soon. Again, I want to repeat what we're really after. Get the two presidential candidates, Republican and Democrat. Get them up there and debate for 2 hours or something. Have them lay out what they really want to do, and then one of them hopefully will become elected. Won't be like Florida, and one will be elected, and then our groups will plan to hold these people accountable to putting something forward. Then in the spring of 2009, as they move into office. And then that'll be laid out in Congress, and then I presume they'll put forward their plan. Obviously, I think I would. But everybody's going to have a shot at it. And I would say even at that time, maybe some of our partners with us won't be exactly the same on each issue. But depending where it ends up, we've decided to be open-minded and look at everything. And that's all I think at this point. It makes sense for us to do. You get further, we're right now, you think about it, the 50 largest CEOs, AARP with 39 million, they have 50 million people that work for them, and they, and the small businesses, they just joined, and the labor unions, millions and millions of members, we're telling them, do something, get going on it. That's what we're telling them now, and that's where we're staying.
There's AARP and its compatriots in this enterprise. Do you have a plan to try to induce or sponsor a presidential debate yourselves by working with anybody?
Oh, we don't have a plan to do that. We're doing it. We have added staff in every one of the caucus states, and I was just at a debate in Iowa, and my successor, I'll answer your question about when my term's up. We had them in New Hampshire. I really enjoyed in Iowa. They do these 20-second, 2-minute soundbite deals. Both sides can do that, and they're darn good at it too. We got we have John McCain and Mike Huckabee, two very fine gentlemen, up there for an hour and a half, only on health care. And they had to get, you know, they you have to ask them about three or four times the same question. And each time they get a little further into it. And hopefully that's, so it's a process. And you know, honestly, when we started this thought, and I still recall, you know, the breakfast I had with Bill Novelli when we were talking about it. And my idea was that we just spring this on him, and so to speak, and do it at the final debates for the Republicans and Democrats. And all of our folks are experts, and they'll say they are experts. Our lobbyists said, no, no, you got to build up to this. You got to build a fire. And that's, so that's what we're doing. And that's a long answer, but yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it now. Another thing you ask about these partners of ours. I was at a meeting, dinner meeting with the Business Roundtable and the SEIU folks. And everybody had to go around the table and, you know, what do you feel about this? You know how you do it when there's 15 or 12 people or something. I'd have to, honest to God, say you couldn't see who was with labor. We were a consumer group. And who was with business by the comments they made. Now, I could tell a little bit by the Armani suits or whatever that some of those guys had on. But other than that, and you know what amounts to? They've got grandchildren and children, and they're Americans. I asked Bill, I says, why, how did we manage to get the small business people into this? That was, I thought, a real success for ourselves. By the way, they were the ones, you know, who sponsored Harry and Louise the last time around. And he says, Eric, they're just as fed up with all this as we are. That was his answer.
There was a question here about the dental health aid therapist and that. And I'd be surprised if someone didn't want to ask me about that anyway. I think the larger point is, you know, do we still have concerns about that as a model? Sure we do. You know, we still don't support it. Is it an answer? I think the jury's out on whether or not, you know, they're going to find enough people to actually do that even in Alaska. I mean, every class they have of four or six kids that start that program, a couple of them are dropping out. I don't know whether that will be a successful venture or not. You know, you have other models that, you know, my colleague here from the American Dental Hygiene Association, they have their advanced dental hygiene practitioner. We have our community dental health coordinator position. I mean, I think clearly we're going to look for new roles for mid-level providers to do different things. I think, though, to make that the forefront of this argument and this discussion is a gross mistake. Because what you're doing is you're seeding the field and giving up on the idea that what we really need are more resources devoted to oral health care at the federal and state levels. You know, we don't need to try and bow to the fiscal, you know, constraints that are being put on us. We need to fight those. We need to overcome those. We need more money at the state level for Medicaid and for SCHIP to get more dental care to more people and not just try and find do more ways with less.
Amos had his hand up, and then Howard, and then Larry, then Alice.
I can't answer this question.
Thanks. The comment was made by Steve, well, we have enough manpower workforce to provide the services. And Amos made the point when we went into Medicare and Medicaid, nurse practitioners evolved and they met the demand for services. So that shouldn't be a constraint in terms of moving ahead. Everyone heard that? Okay, great. Howard was next.
I just wanted to, thank the panel for their collective wisdom. And I just want to put forward the point of view of the American Public Health Association. We have a policy of a single-payer system, universal health care,
Anyone want to? That was a statement.
That
was okay. Okay. Next question. Keep your questions brief, please, so everyone gets a chance. Thank you. Eric?
Yeah, you mentioned, and I know this is a dental section of the APHA. This group that we formed, this little umbrella group, and Divided We Fail, we're getting people who take the pledge, or organizations that take the pledge and join in. It's pretty generic. I mean, you're asking for a bipartisan solution to the problems of health security and financial security, and I wish I could quote it, but it's not much more specific than that, really. And somebody wants to... we had recently the NAACP join as a supporter of this activity, and certainly I wouldn't think we would turn it down, not that we'd have any choice, but, you know... We'd look for support from groups like yours.
Alice, do you still have a question?
Well, not a question. And it's what you're doing.
good point. Prevention's the name of the game, and it should be part of any national health program. Gene, question, comment?
Question that we turned down at first. He said, how long will I be involved in this? And I have a 2-year term as president of AARP. It's a volunteer position, just similar to the American Dental Association's title of president, I think. And, I'm a volunteer, and my term actually is up next May, but I want to say two things about it. First of all, it's built into the system now, what we're doing, and my successor is named Jenny Chin Hansen. Some of you may have run into her. She, if I was a successful CEO, and I was, of a dental prepayment organization, biggest in the world, she is probably the successful CEO of one of the best multi-care medical organizations in the world called Onlock in San Francisco, which provides a combination of care for. So she comes from a background of health care, certainly, registered nurse. She probably is, if she were up here talking to me, you'd hear a lot more about long-term care and how, that wasn't even mentioned, you know, that's really all part of this, isn't it? So you hear, she has a total devotion to this, and I can assure you that our CEO, Bill Novelli, does, and the entire organization. This is what, we're going to get it on the stage. That's what we're going to do, and let's hope it works.
Pat, Cass?
Yeah, I wanted to just echo some of the ADA comments, but it makes me feel good when I take my ADA news to give you sports. I'm certainly getting the impression that at least the leadership of the ADA is beginning to think more broadly about this issue. But I wondered your thought about, I mean, it seems to me that one of the things that our people suffer from is that
Dr. Evans, I mean, that's an excellent question. All I can say is, you know, look to the advocacy communications that we send out. Actually, you know, Steve used a couple of them in his PowerPoint. I'd say that far and away we are spending more of our resources on this issue. And you were correct. We have to do, part of that has to be making sure that our grassroots, our average member, understands why these things are important and why we have to devote so much time and attention to them. It's going to be a continual battle, but I think we're getting there. And I appreciate your comments about, you know, we obviously had an excellent meeting in San Francisco recently with your leadership and our leadership. We have to do more of that. I know that Myron has a question, but before that, I just wanted to mention one thing on this very topic is that we have labor age appropriations coming to the House floor tomorrow, coming to the Senate floor on Wednesday. They have a lot of good things in there for dental, We've got to get a veto-proof majority for that piece of legislation. So if any of you are going up to the Hill or senior member of Congress, lobby on that tomorrow. I would tell you that obviously what we'll do is that we'll look to see which of those members of Congress voted with us and which of those didn't, and that's how we determine who we support in the next election. I mean, that's just, you know, as basic as we can get, the ADA.
Okay, we're over time, and I want to ask the last question. We have the ADHA president here. We have a senior vice president from the ADA. We have the president of AARP. And the Vice President of Special Olympics. How about getting these organizations, which are sensitive to dental, to sign on to Divided We Fail? What's the possibility of that with ADHA, ADA? And essentially, you know, all AARP is saying is we need some kind of a national health program of some kind. We need something. Too many people are dying. Too many people are sick. We spend more money than any other country in the world, twice as much. We're ranked 45th. Internationally in life expectancy, 45th, and we spend much more than everyone else. We're in the 20s in infant mortality, and we're not number one, but we're number one in spending money. So how can we get these other groups to join? The AMA, I don't know if you've approached the AMA, the American Hospital Association, but let me ask Bill with the ADA, what's the likelihood of getting them, ADHA, and these other groups to join? So dental is at the table. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, and I think you guys got to jump on.
Who gave Dr. Aloukian the microphone? I get a wonderful opportunity to do what I do best, which is pass the buck, because actually Dr. Olson will be in the Chicago headquarters, the American Dental Association, in a couple of days, and I'm sure he'll be asking my leadership that very question.
Yes. Those of you who are heads of your national organizations, Bill, can you? I will give you my card, but they'll give you a person to call at AARP to discuss this matter. Bill, can you help me with that, or do you want me to give them your number? What?
You want my number, or who they should talk to?
Yeah, who could? Either way, yeah.
I would say Lisa K. Davis.
Lisa K. Davis. The number is 202-434. AARP, which is 2277. Her name is Lisa Davis. She's the head of the Divided We Fail group. And if you have a thought that your organization might be interested, then do that. Now, you can all sign a pledge on the website. You can find out more on our website. It's a very, very extensive website. We have news on there on this subject, Divided We fail.org. You can go to the AARP.org and, of course, switch over to it, but then it's also there. And so it's a local 202-434-2277, or maybe send her an email. It'd be at, what? I'm not sure. Anyway, give them a call, and Bill's right. I will be discussing this with some of the folks.
Well, let me thank all of you, all of the panelists, and especially Dr. Olson. Dr. Olson has a very, very, very busy schedule. We're very fortunate to have someone like him here. Our panelists were fantastic, also very busy people. What we really need, which I mentioned before, we need weapons of mass instruction. We have to get out there and educate the American people and get all our groups together. I like to quote Winston Churchill. who said the nice thing about the American people is they always do the right thing after they've tried everything else. And we have an opportunity to get our presidential candidates on board. Let's speak up at the hearings, you know, whatever the hearings are, wherever the debates are, raise your hand, ask questions, and that's how you sensitize these decision makers. Thank you all to the audience and the panelists.